It's great to see you this morning. Thank you very much for being a part of our services here at Azalea City. We do want you to know that if you're visiting with us, as was already mentioned, it's probably no secret that tonight starts our Vacation Bible School. We have had a lot of folks working hard. As you can see behind me, there's been a lot of things going on to be able to make Vacation Bible School special. Today is kickoff Sunday, and in order to make it kick off the right way, there has to be a lot of moving parts that go into it. It is a really cool moment for me as a man who has grown up here, who has been involved heavily with Vacation Bible School now in a minister capacity for almost 20 years. It's really special to see that even after all these years, people still come together, work together, spend many hours. People that built this behind me did not get home till 3 a.m. And they're here today, and I appreciate that. There's been a lot of time going into this, and it would be a shame if nobody showed up. That's why we've got to do our part. Maybe you think, hey, I prayed about it, you know, but I haven't really been involved. Well, everybody can pick up the phone. They can pick up whatever and reach out to some children around you, some families around you. We will have classes for teenagers. We will have classes for adults. I'll be teaching that. Russell and Justin will be teaching the teens. No matter what age group, there is something for everyone. If you thought, hey, I'd still like to help, well, guess what? At the amen of this prayer, there's going to be Sunday afternoon for the Master. You're welcome to be a part and get involved. There's still work to do, folks. But I know that God will bless us. No matter what number we have, we will do our best to plant the seed, to remind people, to help people to know for maybe the very first time that God is the one to be glorified. See, that's a lesson that is learned in the stories from Daniel 1 through 6. If you look through those lessons, God got the glory no matter what those people faced, no matter what was threatened against them or no matter what happened to them. They stood and faced their fears with boldness to be able to say, our God is our God. Today, as we get into this lesson, as we look at what I believe will be something that will help us, it's a lesson about doing less. We've talked about our theme this year is more. So today, in the last couple weeks, we've talked about, well, what if we did less? What if we didn't do what God wanted us to do? What are the results of that? Well, I want to look at a man today that spent most of his life, at least the majority of his life, doing less. He wasn't a godly man. He wasn't grown up. He didn't grow up in a godly household. He grew up in a very secular place, a place that didn't know God, a place that didn't understand who Jehovah was. And by the time that he rose to power, he didn't care who Jehovah was. And that is King Nebuchadnezzar. You see, we always look at the Bible heroes, but today I'm going to talk about a Bible villain. I believe this Bible villain had some heroic moments, though, in his life. And so I think this story will end in a good spot today, or this lesson will end in a good spot. But I wanted to look at it on the side of Nebuchadnezzar. First of all, it helps us to paint the scene of what's going to take place as we tell this story. But I also want to get into his mindset, because I'm afraid sometimes his mindset, maybe not so much, our mindset may not be so much different than his. So I want you to turn in your Bibles, if you haven't already, to Daniel 1. We're going to skip around these first few chapters here. But Daniel 1, I'm not going to give away all of it tonight, even though most of us know the story. Or today, I keep saying tonight, but I meant today. Daniel 1, verses 1 and 2. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Now that just kind of lays the scene of what's happened. You see, King Jehoiakim is king of Judah. And King Jehoiakim and the people of Judah, the people, God's people, they are not doing very good things in the sight of God. And so God has had enough. He had enough of his people rebelling against him, his people doing things contrary to the Ten Commandments that he gave them through Moses. He's tired of it. You ever get sick and tired of things as a parent? Maybe especially if kids are fussing back and forth. You might let it go for a little bit thinking, okay, they'll work it out. They'll come to a conclusion. Or you may be like me, and it depends on the mood I'm in too. But ultimately I will say, I have had enough. And they will shut their mouths. Because Daddy has had enough. Well, guess what? God the Father had enough. And he said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to raise up a nation. And they are going to conquer you. And they will enslave you. They will make you worship their gods. They will do all these things to you until you wake up. Until you decide to do what you need to do. So King Nebuchadnezzar rises to power. If you study his history, he was a powerful prince. And when his father came time to pass away, he became the king, and he is a very, very ruthless king according to secular history. It records him as brutal. It records him as powerful. It also records him as ambitious. He was one that wanted to go and conquer. He wanted to conquer the world. And in a sense, he did with the Babylonian Empire. He was a very strong king. He had a lot of things done that even today are still amazing people throughout the world. For instance, if you go back to his life, he built giant things, okay? Now I know these walls are pretty tall, right? But they pale in comparison to the walls that surrounded the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian walls around the city that Nebuchadnezzar built were 300 feet high. That is unfathomable to me. 300 feet high. They were so thick, they were 80 feet thick. 300 feet tall. 80 feet thick, and they were buried 35 feet under the ground. It was a pretty secure place. But he built giant walls, right? Well, we know in Daniel chapter 3, what else did he do? He built a giant statue, 90 feet tall. Now, you might think, you know, if you're like me sometimes in the years gone by, I read that thinking, how in the world did they build something 90 feet tall? But when they got 300-foot walls, 90 feet ain't that big, right? But it's a giant image, a giant statue. And he had the power to make a law to say, when the music plays, I want you to bow down and worship my statue. By the way, God's people are in there, and a lot of them bow down. We'll see that. But the reality is, they're in there because they did less. They didn't do more. They did less. In fact, sometimes they did none. Okay? They did nothing. They didn't do anything at all. And so they end up having to listen to a man who is their king, not God. And he tells them to bow down and do whatever he wants. He created, Nebuchadnezzar did, the famous Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which is considered one of the seven great wonders of the world. He was a man of great power. But I suggest to you again, He was able to obtain this power. He was able to obtain this ability because God allowed him to. God didn't bless him. God used him to teach Israel a lesson. You see, Nebuchadnezzar's life teaches us many things we should not be doing. Nebuchadnezzar didn't do more for God. In fact, most of his life, he didn't do anything at all. His life reminds me of a few things that I do not want to be guilty of. Maybe I have been guilty of them in the past, but I don't want to be guilty anymore. Just like I am going to guarantee you, you don't want to be guilty of these. Even if you're guilty of them now, you don't want to be guilty anymore. And here they are. Number one, you know what Nebuchadnezzar did? He chose little g gods over big G God. He chose gods over God. He chose gods over Yahweh. He chose gods over Jehovah. He chose gods over the one and only true living God. He chose His gods. If you go back to that text in verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of Jehovah. Okay? Which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his, that's Nebuchadnezzar's, little g, God. He took what belonged to Jehovah into his little g, God. What a slap in the face. What an insult to our God. He brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. He carried what belonged to Jehovah into the house of his God. What a shame. What a mockery of the first commandment of God to the Israelites. You shall have no other gods before me. And God delivered His people into a land where a man took what belonged to God into the house of his gods. There is so much irony. There is so much sadness. There is so much stupidity in all of those things. But what bothers me is sometimes I don't know that we're that much different. What does the word Lord mean? Webster simply calls it, one of the definitions, having power and authority over others. Here's what God said. He said it in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Well, He said it to Moses, who said it to the people. Love the Lord. I want to have authority and power over you, the Lord your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. He told them to teach that diligently to their children. He told them to talk about it when they laid down in bed and when they got up out of bed. He told it to put it as a reminder on your finger. He told them to put it as frontlets between their eyes. He told them to put it on the doorposts and put it on the gates. So when they left the house and they left the city and they came back in the city and they came back in the house, they were talking about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength, all the time. But you know what? Somewhere along the way, they just quit. There was a family who decided, we're too busy. I'm not going to teach my... Man, we're tired tonight. I know Moses told us in Deuteronomy 6 to talk about loving the Lord our God with everything we got when we lay down. But guys, we're tired. It's been a long day. We'll do it in the morning. Oh man, we slept in late. Oh no, get up, get up, brush your teeth, do everything else. Oh no, we don't have time. We'll talk about him later. No, we, and then all of a sudden they're not talking about him anymore. It started with one family somewhere, and then it carried over to other families and other generations. To all of a sudden now, you know where they are? They are in Babylon, bowing down to a false god. Nebuchadnezzar is taking what belongs to our God and giving it to his God, because somewhere along the way, little g became big G. Something besides the Lord started lording over them. And so the question I need to ask us today is, what lords our lives? What has the power and authority in our lives today? It's a fair question, folks. It's a question you need to ask, and it's a question I need to ask, and we need to look ourselves right in the mirror and ask ourselves this: what's controlling my life? Not tomorrow or the next day, but even right now. Maybe I come in here and I can't listen to a word of what Brother Larry tells us about communion. I can't focus on a prayer. I can't sing the songs. I can't listen to Terry because my job is running my life. Let me just tell you something in confession mode. Even I've been there. And what I mean by that, even I don't mean that in derogatory terms like, well, even my level of faith. No, even though you think, I see empty pews. Instead of coming here and participating in song and listening to those words and focusing, sometimes I focus on who's not here. And I focus on how much deficit we have. By the way, we don't right now in the budget, so keep giving. But I focus on those things. Okay? I focus on people that we've lost, people I haven't called, people I haven't checked on. And instead of letting the Lord, who Brother Larry very plainly said, God is right here, I am distracted by my job. I'm just confessing to you, I've been there. Are we letting it lord our lives? Maybe it's our problems. Folks, we've all got them. If you don't have problems, I would love to have your life. But we have them. Whether they're big or small, to some, they're big to you. And they're big to me. Is that what's consuming us right now? Maybe it's our phone. Our devices, our social media. Just as a rule of thumb, if I can't go, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you I haven't been guilty of this, okay? If I can't go, somebody has texted me while I've been in this sermon. I saw it on my iPad. I'm not going to call them out. There's not anybody in here. I'm like, I'm preaching. Maybe they're done with church. I don't know. Worship. But the point of it is, can we go 1 hour without looking at our phones during worship service? If we can't, oh, if it just pains us, maybe that thing's lording over us. Just a question we need to ask ourselves. What about our selfish desires? Are any of these things or anything else more important than God? I mean, can we ask ourselves and answer that question pretty resoundingly? Are any of the things outside of God more important than God? No. They're not. They're not whatsoever. God's got to be first. He's got to be Lord of all, or He's not Lord at all. John said about Jesus, He must increase and I must decrease. We've got to get rid of the little G's in our lives. And we've got to make room for Jehovah, big G, God. Well, you know what else Nebuchadnezzar did? If we're talking about doing less and not doing more and learning lessons about it, here's what I would put as number two. He chose self over selflessness. He chose self over selflessness. Daniel 3, 1 through 7, please. If you have it, read along with me. By the way, you can get your phone or device out to read your scriptures. Daniel 3, 1 through 7. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, counselors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the office officials of the provinces to come in the direction of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, all those people, okay? They came together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, the symphony with all kinds of music, all the people's nations, languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Now, I don't know beyond a shadow of a doubt what the image looked like. There's been a lot of speculation on it. But most people would say that it was an image in the likeness of Nebuchadnezzar. Why would he do that? Well, my answer to that simple question would be because he could. Because he was wrapped up in Nebuchadnezzar. If you look at kings, all the kings of the Bible and even kings in secular history too, okay? When they got to the throne, most of them are wrapped up in self. Because they have so much power, so much authority, and so much strength at their command that they feel like they are God. You see, Nebuchadnezzar, as you can see from his life, was a very selfish person. He looked at what was best for him, what was best for his people, but especially for him. And a lot of times, that cost him. Selfishness is still a problem. Children learn the word mine. Mine, that's mine, that's mine. No, it's mine. They fight and fuss, it's mine. But sometimes we don't get out of that stage, right? It's mine. Well, I want to suggest to you that none of it's ours. It's all God's. No matter what we possess, it does not belong to us. No matter what we have, it's not ours. It's God's. And we need to live our lives that way. Because you know what happens when we don't? We stray away. When we put our focus on self, we stray away. Now, I'm not making that up. James said it this way. We are drawn away, lured away by our own lusts, our own desires. The devil throws a lure on top of us as we're in the water trying to just do our own thing. And he puts the right lure at the right time and we want it. But what we fail to realize is it's full of hooks. And then we're hooked. And then we are out of control because we put the focus on self rather than the Savior. We put the focus on self rather than being selfless, just like Jesus Christ Himself. Here's what happens biblically if we do not quit being selfish people. And before I read this, I want to say this. I've said it before and I'll say it again. The mindset. Do you know why some people quit church, quit God, quit Azalea City, quit our eldership, quit whatever, okay? You know why some people quit? Because they have the mindset that what has the church done for me? I'm just going to tell you, if that's your mindset, you need to change it. It's about what have I done for the church. You see, we are here for God. We are here for growing the kingdom for God. Now, does the kingdom do things for others? Absolutely. But it's not all about me. When I came up out of the water, it quit being about me. It's about Him. But here's what happens. Romans 1. I'm going to read this from the New Living Translation because I want you to hear it in a language that we all can understand today. Beginning in verse 18, Romans 1. But God shows His anger from heaven against all sinful, wicked people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. That's selfishness. They know the truth about God because it was made obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see the invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature, so they have no excuse for not knowing God. Yes, they know God, but they wouldn't worship Him as God or even give Him thanks. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. As a result, their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools. And instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds and animals and reptiles. So God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their hearts desire. As a result, they did vile and degrading things with each other's bodies. They traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator Himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. Amen. That is why God abandoned them to do their shameful desires. Even the women turned against the natural ways to have sex and instead indulged in sex with each other. And the men, instead of having normal sexual relations with women, burned with lust for each other. Men did shameful things with other men, and as a result of their sin, they suffered within themselves the penalty they deserved. Since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, He abandoned them to do their foolish thinking and let them do things that should never be done. Their lives became full of every kind of wickedness, sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, malicious behavior, and gossip. They are backstabbers, haters of God, insolent, proud, and boastful. They invent new ways of sinning, and they disobey their parents. They refuse to understand, break their promises, are heartless, and have no mercy. They know God's justice requires that those who do these things deserve to die, yet they do them anyway. Worse yet, they encourage others to do them too. That starts with selfishness. Nebuchadnezzar, I'm going to give you a dream. And this dream is going to bother you, and Daniel's going to interpret it. Daniel, interpret the dream. You don't want me to. Yes, I do. Go ahead and tell me. He said, you're going to be this big tall tree, and eventually, because you won't do what you're supposed to do, your limbs are going to be cut off, and you're going to be cut down to a stump. Sounds good. Thank you for the interpretation. That leads us to number 3. because he couldn't get over the selfishness, because he couldn't truly put God as the big G. He chose hay over humility. Daniel, okay, Belteshazzar, as he calls him, he tells him, God is going to chop you. He gave you the power and he will take it away. He says, okay, he hears it. And here's how he responds. Chapter 5, verse 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of the 12 months, he was talking about the royal palace of Babylon. Now listen to this. Quit being selfish, king. That's what he told him. But the king spoke, saying, is this not great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? That's verse 30. Daniel told him, change your ways. Okay, I'm not Daniel. I can't interpret dreams, but I am a messenger of God because I am the preacher of the Azalea City Church of Christ. And I just told us we better put God first, make Him Lord, and we better get out of selfishness. But you have the right to choose or not. Nebuchadnezzar chose hay over humility. The very next verse, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen or cattle, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever He chooses. That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass. In my wording, it's hay, right? So I can make it alliterate together. He ate grass or hay like ox or cattle. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird claws. There are many people today walking around saying, look what I've done. There may even be those sitting in here with that mindset. But as I said earlier, none of it's ours, folks. Everything we have comes from God. History repeats itself. Nebuchadnezzar did it right. God warned Cain, hey, sin lies at the door. But Cain chose to murder anyhow. Why? Because he was full of anger and it felt good to kill Abel. That haunted him the rest of his life. The prodigal son found himself in a pig's pen. The blood of Jezebel was consumed by dogs. King Herod died and was eaten by worms. We could go on and on. But in a nutshell, here it is. If I put gods over God, if I put self over the Savior, then I am writing a terrible end to my life for all eternity. I like to think Nebuchadnezzar got it right. I don't know. Nobody does on earth. But when he came to his senses after the insanity that he was in, I want you to listen to what we have of him. If you look at Daniel chapter 4, Here's what verses 34 and following say. At the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised Him and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain His hand or say to Him, "What have you done?" At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth, His ways justice, and those who walk in pride, He is able to put down. As we come to a close, it took seven periods of time of being like a cow or an ox, eating grass from the field, growing out nasty hair and nasty nails, and living a nasty life for him to come to himself. It took the prodigal son living the life of a pig for him to come to himself. Some of you may be in a pig's pen right now. You may be out in the pasture right now. Or some of you may be headed down that road. But here's my plea to all of us today. It's really God's plea to us. Come home. Come home. Recognize Him as Jehovah. Make Him Lord of your life. Get rid of selfishness. Let's put God and others ahead of ourselves. And let's humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord, because He will lift us up. If you need to obey the gospel, or you need to come home, let's do it right now together. We stand and sing.